This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm in the studio with Carey Jr. II. He is the show's producer. Carey, I know I rattled you out of your weekend slumber yesterday when I texted you in the middle of the day and said, hey, we got to do something different tomorrow.
When I tell you I was standing outside of my apartment door with golf clubs, like I had
In
my hand when I got that text message. I was like, no.
It's like, I won't be going to the course
today. I won't be going to hit golf balls today. But it was a momentous, and as they always say in the news cycle during a political election, unprecedented occasion.
Well, this is really unprecedented. People use that word and it's not precise, but here I don't think there's anybody who's alive, at least, who's experienced something quite this tumultuous in the middle of a political campaign. It's 1968 since a sitting president decided not to seek re-election. Lyndon Johnson that year begged off in March, though, while the primaries were still going on. The idea of doing it in July, near the end of July, just a month before the Democratic convention, is something else. It throws everything into flux.
Absolutely. And so we all know the news at this point. President Joe Biden withdrew his candidacy for president and also endorsed his vice president, Kamala Harris. And since then, we've seen a flurry of Democrats come in support of her. New York Times article lists about 198 people who publicly supported Ms. Harris. So some notable people from that list are Representative Ocasio-Cortez, and then there's about 70 issued statements. 70 Democrats have issued statements, but did not publicly support Harris. That includes our governor, Gretchen Whitmer. It also includes Nancy Pelosi. That also includes Chuck Schumer. So there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, and despite the, I guess, appearance of order here, where the president says, I'm not running and I'm going to endorse the vice president. Mm-hmm. Some people may think, well, that's the end, but it's really not. I mean, there's a process that's going to unfold here. And that's what we want to talk about today, what that process looks like. And especially, how does that process include the kind of fairness that people, I think, expect out of a selection process? I mean, there are millions of people who went to the polls this winter and spring to vote in the Democratic primary. And there wasn't a lot of choice, right? President Biden was really your choice.
Biden would win,
or not.
Yes.
But, you know, I mean, when you do that, I think there's an expectation that that vote matters and that the person who wins will be the person who gets to be the nominee. And I think there is a real question about how Democrats wade through all of this in a way that doesn't make people feel like, I don't know, they were ripped off.
Yeah. I think we think when we hear that Biden drops out that this will be an open opportunity for anyone who wants to run can run. And now we're also seeing kind of where the party is kind of rallying support around Kamala Harris. Another question is, there's funding and donor funding, and there's a lot of momentum that the vice president has at this point, understandably so, but it also calls into question whether or not people are actually going to have a choice in who their nominee would be, the Democratic voters.
Yeah. So we've got a number of guests who are going to join us today. We're going to talk a little later to Debbie Dingell, one of the members of Congress from here in the state of Michigan. Also Jamal Simmons, who was the former communications director for Vice President Harris. But we're going to start with Professor Matt Dalek of George Washington University. He's a political historian. Joined us before to talk about these kind of things. And EJ Dionne, who is a columnist for The Washington Post, somebody who has covered an awful lot of presidential elections. Professor Matt Dalek, welcome back to Created Equal.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And EJ Dionne, it is always wonderful to have you here with us as well. Welcome to Created Equal.
Great to be with you. It was fun to talk to Kerry yesterday in the middle of a political hurricane.
Right. So, EJ, I am going to start with you principally because I know how long you have covered presidential politics in Washington. Tell me just first your reaction to what happened, but also give us a sense of how Democrats sell this idea to all those voters who came out during the primary and thought they were making a decision about who would the nominee would be.
Well, a couple of things. One is I've been around so long that I covered Joe Biden as the new generation candidate back in 1987.
Yeah.
You know, he had to drop out that year. And he made a very compelling case, by the way, at the time that it was a good time to move on to a new generation. So I've known him for a long time, have real affection for him, and actually think he's been a really good president. My reaction was one of, in a sense, elation, I got to say, because, you know, after the debate at the end of June, it just seemed to me pretty clear that he wasn't the Joe Biden that many who voted for him in that those primaries, and I was one of them, thought he was, that, perhaps we were deluded, but we thought he was ready for this campaign and could move on. And it wasn't that it was a bad debate. It was that he was sort of missing moments. Something seemed wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I think for a lot of people who really liked Biden, and indeed people who wanted him to protect and defend his legacy, it turned out that the best thing he could do was to drop out. It's ironic, really, because Biden, you know, said he ran a second time because he thought he was the one person who could defeat Donald Trump. And I think in the end, he realized that the best way for him to defeat Donald Trump was to drop out of the race and open it up to another candidate. Right now, that candidate now seems inevitable. It's Kamala Harris. And that was perhaps predictable before this happened. If you talk to a number of the people, as I was doing in Congress, who wanted Biden to drop out, a lot of them wanted to move on quickly to Harris just to get this campaign rolling again. And you also saw a lot of potential rivals, Governor Whitmer of your state, notable among them, Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania, just saying, we're not going to contest this race. We endorse Kamala Harris. So it's a fait accompli. I still think for sections of the party, it would be good to show that, you know, this is not simply somebody arranging this behind the scenes. This is a whole lot of Democrats, elected Democrats, delegates who decided the best way for the party to move forward is to move on. We'll see how that plays out in the next few days.
Yeah, yeah. Professor Dalek, I'm going to bring you in here in the conversation. You and I had a conversation just a few weeks ago here on the show about the prospect of an open convention, which back then I think was something that seemed possible. This is how quickly the news cycle in this election is moving. The table looks very different in front of us right now. But I want to have you talk about this process, how this will work, and I guess how it should work. What is the inclusive or democratic way to replace a candidate this late in the process?
It's such a great question, and it's also one that's really hard to answer because since really 1972, the parties have operated through this democratic primary process, small d, meaning that the voters get to decide. And now, really for, I think, the first time since then, in decades, a candidate has dropped out very late. And so we're back to a kind of pre-1972 era, to some extent, at least, where several thousand, in this case, delegates. Now, as EJ said, right, these are elected officials. They're elected delegates. You know, these are not sort of a small group of white men in the smoke-filled room, per se. So I think they have a real stake, a real claim to being reflective and representative of the will of the voters, but still people are not going to get to vote and nominate Kamala Harris per se. So I don't think that there is a great answer to should. I mean, I think the party is sort of feeling its way as best it could. I'm a little, not totally surprised, but just a little surprised at how swiftly people have rallied behind the vice president,
sure,
given that she, you know, at least her poll numbers are not super popular, right? She's underwater as well. And there are obviously a lot of other prominent Democrats, including the governor of your state, who some Democrats, I think in an ideal world, would be better a position to go after Donald Trump and to defeat him. But I think a lot of Democrats and a lot of Democratic officials are saying, you know, we don't want the perfect to be the enemy of the good.
Sure.
And there are, of course, real risks to having a kind of open or contested convention. And so, you know, it looks like it's going to be Vice President Harris, and the party seems to be rallying behind her very aggressively.
Yeah. So
could I just say something?
Go ahead, EJ. Yeah.
I broadly agree with Matt on what he said. You can't have a contest if the other people in the contest, potential people, don't show up.
Right.
And I think that what's clearly happened here is that the big potential players that everybody was talking about, Governor Whitmer, notably Governor Shapiro, others, made a decision probably before President Biden announced, because you could see this coming. I thought it had become inevitable by the end of last week, when, you know, a whole bunch of Democrats came out, 12 on Friday, saying this is over. That they decided that for their long-term interest and also for the interest of the party, they're jumping in the race would probably do them no good, would create more division than the excitement of an open convention. I always thought there was a lot of romanticism about open conventions. Democrats in 1924 had 103 ballots. Mm-hmm. That was as open as a convention could be. And the Democratic candidate, a guy we've forgotten called John W. Davis, got less than 29% of the vote in the general election. So open conventions are not a miraculous cure for anything. But I think they just decided, no, this is not the right time for us to run. And so they fell in line behind Kamala Harris. And now it's very hard to see who could turn this into anything like a competitive race. Somebody might come along, but it doesn't, I don't see any obvious person to do it.
Yeah. So here's the big question that I guess I have. If you're a Democrat who voted in these primaries, I think the question you might be asking today is, if this was what was going to happen, that the president would step aside and endorse his vice president for the position, why not do that last fall when Joe Biden came out and said, "Oh, you know, I'm going to run again. I'm going to seek the nomination." That would have given voters the chance to select either Kamala Harris or any of these other potential candidates that people are talking about, and I think the process would have at least seemed a lot more open, a lot fairer. And so I think, you know, I mean, I get what's going on, and I get that the president is probably in a different position in terms of his physical and mental soundness now than he was last fall. But it does seem like that, you know, that decision last fall to go ahead and run and not step aside for Harris, it could end up hurting them, I guess, with some of their own voters. What do you think, EJ?
I think in retrospect that the premise of your question is right, and I didn't think so at the time. So shame on me, I guess.
You felt like Biden was the right choice.
I thought Biden had it. I thought he could carry it through. And I thought that he was somebody who could pull what is often a very divided party together. I mean, I think what the paradox of the end game here is that Biden was the best guy, a person, to hold together a party that runs from center, you know, all the way over to the left. And they're both, all factions were broadly comfortable with Joe Biden. By the end, he was dividing the party between people who thought he could should stay and people who thought he could leave. In retrospect, I think the premise of your question is right, that it would have been better if he had said, I'm not running again. I said that I was a bridge, you know, as he said in 2020.
Yep. Yep.
And I've had a lot of successes. I've achieved what I needed to achieve. I defeated Donald Trump, protected democracy. I'm going to be the best president I can for the rest of this term, and let's have a contest. And would that have been, in retrospect, a better way to do it? I think the answer is yes. I think one of the questions that we haven't answered yet, not we here on the call, but information is not fully clear on, is how much of the deterioration of Biden happened in the last 4 to 6 months, and how much of this should have been obvious to the people around him last year. There were a lot of people around who were calling him on him not to run, and a lot of them are saying, with some justice, we were right about that now. But I think there is, at least my impression, and my impression in talking to people is that something happened, something accelerated here in the course of 2024 that led to that debate moment. And I hope we can learn before the great historians like Matt have to get to it, exactly what was going on here, because I think that's one of the big mysteries.
Yeah, yeah. Professor Dalek, I'll give you the last word on this before we have to break. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. I remember distinctly having a conversation actually with a historian friend of mine in May of 2023. And I said, you know, Biden running again is a real risk. And he said, but Biden not running again is also a real risk, because you don't know who you're going to get and if the party's going to fracture. You know, I think Biden actually, with the information he had in, let's say, last year, late last year, probably made a reasonable decision, especially if the deterioration was, as EJ was saying, and that's my impression too, more recent than it was, say, a year ago, because I was under the impression that Biden could do this, right? That he was very vigorous, quite sharp. He was, you know, making reasonable judgments. He could unify the party as EJ was saying, and he seemed, you know, ready to go. And he had beat Trump once and gotten a lot done in his first term, been a very effective president. So I think he had a really strong case, but you know. I think he made a somewhat reasonable judgment, but it was also risky. And it turned out that in some ways it backfired. And, you know, we are where we are. And that debate certainly mattered, right? It gave people a ton of new information about him. And really it confirmed the critics, right? His Republican critics and others. It confirmed their worst opinion of him. And I think that was extremely damaging, and it was obviously not recoverable.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. I want to thank EJ Dion of the Washington Post for being with us. EJ, of course, we're going to be calling on you again soon, I imagine, as we get closer to the convention. I imagine you'll be there and able to tell us what is actually going on. But thanks for being here with us.
Well, really great to be with you. And love DET and your great alumnus and still friend, Don Gagne, who is a real pillar of NPR.
Absolutely. We were trying to get him this morning. He's hosting Here and Now this week. So
he's a little busy, Don, right now.
That's right. Okay, yeah, when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Professor Matt Dalek of George Washington University. We are going to add Congresswoman Debbie Dingell to the conversation as well. We want to hear from you, the listeners. What do you think of the transition in the Democratic primary in the middle of a presidential election? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Back with more Created Equal. from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We're talking about the news, the only news that there seems to be right now. President Joe Biden announcing yesterday that he will not seek the presidency again here in 2024 after having won the primaries and was preparing for the Democratic convention next month. We've got Professor Matt Dolick with us. He is a political historian at George Washington University, someone who has paid an awful lot of attention to the process of presidential politics for a really long time. I want to welcome another voice to the conversation as well. Debbie Dingell is a congresswoman from right here in the state of Michigan. She represents the 6th district in our state in Washington. Debbie, always great to have you here. Welcome to Created Equal.
Good morning, Stephen, and it's always great to be with you.
Yes. Debbie, I would love to get your quick reaction to the news, and then I want to have you talk about what happens next, the process. And I ask you that not just as someone who's a sitting member of Congress, but someone who has been really involved in the process inside the Democratic Party for a long time. You're someone who has pushed for reform of that process. You're someone who has had to make tough decisions about how things should go. I'm really curious about what you think about how we select the next person to represent the party in November.
Well, those are complicated questions, and you're the first person that really does recognize how much I do understand what these rules are. And many there, but let me start with what my reaction was. I've known the Bidens for what seems like forever. They got married when John and I got married. The last 3 weeks have been hard to witness. The debate certainly stunned everybody, and none of us really still yet understand what happened that night. But this is a man that has devoted almost 50 years of his life to public service. And we've had a circular firing squad, which I think had the potential to hurt others as well. And it made me sad. I mean, it simply made me sad. I think when you are loyal to someone, you tell them the truth, but you say it to their face. You don't leak to the media. Yesterday, when the announcement came, I just wanted to cry because of what a difficult decision I knew that had to be for him to make. And I think some of what played out was an unnecessary circular firing squad, and people owed it to having direct conversations with him to his face. But we're there. I hope we all celebrate the work that he's done, the very significant achievements he has gotten done during this presidency. When we get beyond the emotions of this moment, we will look at his accomplishments, and he will be one of the greatest presidents. So we said that. Having said that, I was one of the people that endorsed Kamala Harris yesterday.
Yep.
I did it, though, because for two reasons. One, I heard from people on all sides of this. I have not really slept in 3 weeks. My parades on 4th of July had two different, you know, one parade was everybody saying he had to go, and the other parade was saying, you better have his back. You can't disenfranchise millions of voters. There is a fact that millions of voters nominated Joe Biden to be president and Kamala Harris as his vice president. I don't think we should disenfranchise us. Joe Biden threw his support to Kamala Harris, hoping, I think, that all of us would follow that. Millions of voters voted for that ticket. And I had talked to other people. I think that some of the observations EJ was making, that I do not think that we're going to see other candidates emerge. We will see. But my endorsement is an endorsement for that reason. It does not mean we should shove this down anybody's throat. We should have a very fair and open process, that transparent, and we'll see what happens this week. But it is necessary for us to stop this circular firing squad and unite, because what we have ahead of us in November is serious.
So Debbie, I want to ask you this. Could you, in theory, let voters make some decisions again? I mean, I know we're only a month from the convention, but could you have kind of a blitz of primaries again to say, all right, well, the people you voted for last time, it looks different. So we've got to have a more open process. I know because you've been so involved with setting up and changing the primary process that you probably thought more about that than other folks. So I'm really curious about what you think of that idea.
I think that you have no idea what a mini primary even means. here is the reality. When you talk about going into the Democratic convention, I thought it was a terrible idea that they were going to just start a virtual vote this week, because it looked like people were trying to just force something to happen. And you need to have a transparent process where some of this is playing out. But here is the reality. In states, because we have early voting now, which is a good thing, but ballots are going to printers. They start, the state of Washington is, for November, is the 20th of August. California is the 24th. I could go through. Just the bureaucracy of a mini primary, setting up ballots, the organization, it's virtually impossible. The Rules Committee started planning for this convention months ago. So I think the rules are in place. The elections have happened in all of these states. And I think we have to try to figure out how we respect the will of the people to the greatest extent. But many primaries are very, very complicated.
So if you couldn't do that, then what does the convention look like from your standpoint as a way of, I guess, trying to be a proxy for that, reflecting that Democratic, small d Democratic influence on the floor somehow during that week rather than in primaries?
Well, first of all, delegates have now been selected in all states, and there are different categories of delegates, as you know. And they have been elected reflecting their state's vote. So they will now pledge to another candidate. I think the biggest thing to watch this week is what candidates really get in and want to run.
Mm-hmm.
I've only heard two names that there were a lot of discussions yesterday, and I think you're going to hear more people that are being talked about probably be public in the next day or two that they're not. I think Marianne Williams and will run. And
another Michigander, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. But she didn't do so well in the primary season. And, you know, there's lots of scuttlebutt about Joe Manchin right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's left the Democratic Party. He called Donna Brazile yesterday, and she told him the first thing he had to do was to rejoin the Democratic Party, and it had to be notarized.
Mm.
And it was his appearance yesterday was on State of the Union, where he said he left the Democratic Party because it was no longer the party of his father. And Jim Clyburd was very effective in saying, thankfully, it isn't, since he wasn't allowed to vote until after 1948 and told the history there. So let's see what happens. Who even really wants, you know, this is not fun to run for president. I don't want to say what I really think about people some days, the kind of the world they put themselves into and the kind of money that has to be raised.
Sure.
So let's see who's going to run. Then they'll all go and try to get the delegates' support and their endorsements. And I think that's important in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. Professor Matt Dalek, I want to bring you back into the conversation at this point and talk about that prospect of a convention where Kamala Harris is maybe the favorite and has lots of people's endorsements, but maybe there are other candidates who are there trying to get delegates to support them. That sounds a little like an open convention, or maybe as close to an open convention as we might have seen in many, many years. Is that the right lens to view this?
I think initially, before Biden announced his withdrawal, I think that was the fantasy version, right? The almost the West Wing version of really an open convention where, you know, you had a 3-week sprint where multiple major candidates who were raising money and giving interviews and maybe holding a debate were vying for delegates. But, you know, as the Congresswoman pointed out, in reality, it's extremely difficult. And, you know, Biden's decision not just to withdraw, but also to endorse his vice president, which is not surprising, but I think we should not underestimate its significance. Because as soon as he did it, he really kind of gave his imprimatur and on her. And we see virtually the entire party rallying behind her. And so, you know, as E.J. Dionne also pointed out, you know, no major candidate has stepped up yet to challenge her. And the two people who have mentioned they might run, there's no real constituency for either one in the Democratic Party. You know, Joe Manchin, Marianne Williamson. So, you know, you really can't have a competitive race if you don't have a competitive opposition. So as of today, and this surprises me actually to some extent, but as of today, it almost seems like, you know, a slam dunk for her. And now having said that, though, the convention will matter a great deal more than maybe other conventions, because it will be a chance for the vice president, in a way, who's been vice president for several years, but to introduce herself to the country
in a really different way. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally, totally, totally different way. And, you know, people don't necessarily know that much about her. And she can kind of define herself and her vision for the party and also for the country for the next 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to take a quick call because I think it's the caller has a question that Debbie Dingell will be a great person to answer. Kathy in Ann Arbor. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I love listening to Debbie Dingell talk. I learn something every time I listen to her, so thank you for having her. My question is, you know, I was also surprised by the swiftness by which everyone is bringing Kamala Harris to the table, and I wonder if it's tied to the $96 million that has been amassed in that war chest, and if she isn't the nominee, what happens to that money? I've done a little bit of reading, but I'd like to hear from the experts on that matter and wonder if it isn't about the money.
So, Kathy, you're talking about the money that the Biden-Harris campaign has already put together. Yeah, yeah, it's a great question. Debbie, what do the rules look like there?
So this is it's a very practical question and practical answer. The fact of the matter is that anybody who's looking at running for president knows how much money they're going to have to raise. So I would never run for the Senate. I don't want to raise that much money. I hate it. But if you noticed yesterday, the Biden campaign transferred the title of the campaign. And because my understanding is, and I'm not a lawyer, but been asking a lot of questions during the last week, is that it was the Biden-Harris ticket that was elected. So those dollars can go to the campaign now that has officially and legally been transferred as of yesterday. I don't think that's the only factor in how candidates are making decisions. I know I've talked to a couple of people as this became people that were thinking about it, maybe some that I'm very close to. And people don't understand how complicated state laws are, what the unless you've worked it and lived it like I have for 30 years trying to change the presidential nominated system, every state has a different set of laws. And one of the things you've already seen, Michael Johnson, the speaker, said last week that there are a lot of laws and a lot of arcane, funny laws in different states, and they're prepared to sue if they can. I think we have to be very vigilant, and the courts are going to do things like both delay, and we've got many partisan courts right now.
So I suspect it's one factor. I think there are many factors that have gone into this decision making for different people.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. Debbie Dingell, it was really great, of course, to have your voice in this conversation. We will talk to you soon as we get closer to the Democratic Convention next month. But thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good being with you. Take care.
We're also going to keep Professor Matt Dalek of George Washington University. And when we come back, we're going to add Jamal Simmons, who is a political strategist and former communications director for Kamala Harris, who is, of course, the vice president of the United States and now the presumptive, I suppose presumptive is the right word, nominee for president of the United States. We'll also continue to hear from you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Give us a call. What do you make of this sudden transition in Democratic politics? President Joe Biden will not seek the re-election. Kamala Harris will be the favorite going forward, at least for a while. What do you make of that? What is a fair process to decide who is the Democratic nominee this fall? 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We are talking about the news of the day, maybe the news of the year. President Joe Biden's announcement yesterday that he will not any longer be seeking the presidency, a re-election to the presidency in the 2024 election. What does that mean for all of the people who voted for him in the primaries? What does that mean for Kamala Harris, who is the vice president and now says she will seek the presidency with Joe Biden's endorsement? We want to hear from you on the phones. 313-577-1019 is the number. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We have Professor Matt Dalek here with us. He is a political historian at George Washington University. And I want to welcome another important voice in this conversation. Jamal Simmons is a political strategist and former communications director for the Vice President, Kamala Harris. Jamal, welcome back to Created Equal.
Thanks for having me. But you left out my most important qualification.
Yes, you're a Detroiter. That's right.
That's right.
Jamal is one of us. big
How you doing this morning?
The local. Yeah, great. It's great to have you here. I obviously want to start with your reaction to what happened yesterday, but quickly I want to get to your assessment of what's happening now. The very swift support that your former boss has been able to amass, and I guess how democratic all of this looks, small d democratic all of this looks, given the suddenness of it all, and the fact that we won't be able to have primaries to decide this.
Yeah, you know, the Democratic Party started to have a conversation over the last few weeks, which was really the conversation that people were having in private a lot about Joe Biden's age and whether or not it was really, you know, he was really going to be up to serving four more years. And I think once we saw the debate performance, a lot of people had real questions about whether or not that was going to be appropriate. Now, Joe Biden had to make that decision because he had won all these delegates. And so now what happens is the delegates get thrown out to the public, right? They're all released from their obligation to Joe Biden. I think you just had my friend Debbie Dingell, Congresswoman Dingell, on a few minutes ago explaining some of this. But they all get released out to the public, and they can make their own decisions. Now, the president has endorsed Kamala Harris and says that she is his choice. But the delegates get to then make a decision. So the delegates are in many ways now the representatives of the communities where they come from. And so those delegates in this democratic process will then make a choice about who they want to support. And right now it looks like many of them are choosing to support Kamala Harris as well as members of Congress, members of the Senate. I just got a list of a lot of third party groups, Black PAC and Collective PAC and the Hispanic Caucus and all these different groups who've come out in support of Kamala Harris. So in that sense, it may not be the, one person, one vote kind of democracy, but it is representative democracy, and it is in that they are groups that are major players in the Democratic Party, and they represent big constituencies in the party, and they will decide who is going to be the next nominee.
Yeah. So Jamal, you worked with Kamala Harris as vice president, as her communications director. So you probably know her better than most people. You certainly know her better than anyone on this call. give us a sense of your confidence in her as a presidential candidate, and also the incredible first that is probably getting steamrolled over here that she represents. I mean, if she does become the nominee and gets elected, she'll be the first African-American woman who is elected president.
Absolutely. I first met Kamala Harris back in 2008 when she was we were both campaigning for Barack Obama when he was running for president. She was the district attorney from San Francisco. And, you know, we just had a kind of an easy, friendship and knew a lot of people in common. And then when she went to the White House as the vice president, I got hired to be her communications director for a year in the White House. And it was a great experience. And the one thing I got to know, knowing her more, is how direct her mind is about getting to a conclusion, about having good outcomes, about making sure that people who aren't in the conversation are being included both in the conversation and in the deliberation of what's happening. She asks tough questions. She can be a tough boss. But she also is trying to get to a good place, and she knows that there are a lot of people who are looking at her because not only is she the first woman of color to be almost nominee for president of a major party, she also was the first woman of color district attorney. She was the first woman of color attorney general in California. She was the first woman of color to be a senator from California. She was the first woman of color to be vice president. Right. So she is very used to the spotlight of being the first. And I think that spotlight creates a lot of attention and a lot of desire to get it right for people. And I will tell you, traveling around the country with her for a year, I saw this so often. Older women who would grab her by the hand with tears in their eyes and say, I never thought I would see the day that a woman would be in the White House. And then little girls who would look up at her like she was Wonder Woman and just like a superhero. And, you know, for me, I've got a small daughter. And one of the reasons I went to work for her was because I wanted my daughter to have the same role model as my son had in Barack Obama. I wanted her to be able to see that anything was possible in this country and she could do whatever she wanted. And so I think we're on the verge of having that come true.
Yeah. When you think about what's going to happen in just a few weeks in Chicago, Jamal, with the convention, how much pressure is the party under to have things, I guess, in order by that point? And by that, what I mean is, the idea of an open convention, I think, makes a lot of folks pretty nervous. The idea of the potential chaos, the potential undermining of the sort of singular message that you're trying to come out of a convention with. What has to happen between now and then to make sure that Harris is the presumptive nominee in the same way that Biden was going to be that presumptive nominee until he dropped out?
Yeah, in one sense, the nomination fight is open because, if you get 300 delegates to support you, not more than 50 in some of these states, you can get your name, submitted to nomination if Kamala Harris doesn't get, majority. So in that sense, anybody can run for the nomination. It gets to be harder, though, when everybody starts to line up behind the potential nominee. And the party had an interest in getting this solved quickly because there's just not enough time. We keep saying there's 4 months, so really there's not 4 months. It's about 3 months, 3.5 months, mm-hmm. right? So the party has to not only have a convention, plan a whole new convention with a new person as a subject matter, right? Like, you need, think about it this way. How many times do you see these bios, these gauzy biographical videos, right? Like, somebody's got to go shoot one of those videos and edit it and get it up and running.
Right.
You know, like, I don't even know if they have signs. He's a logo designer. I'm going to design a logo and print signs. And then at some point, you're going to have to create lawn signs and, you know, send those yard signs out to the different states. So there's a lot of work that has to be done before you get there. And then she's got to pick a vice president, and maybe that's a place where we have a little bit more transparency and competition. But you're going to have to choose a vice president to be whose name needs to be submitted in nomination at the convention. And the thing is, the vice president's name gets submitted by the presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to have a presidential candidate in order to get a vice presidential nominee submitted and ratified by the convention. So there's just a lot of steps that need to be done. And then you got to return focus back to, I think, one of the big questions of the ballot, which is Donald Trump.
Yes.
And I was in Detroit about 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago or so, for a funeral. And I talked to a lot of family members. And one of the things I heard a lot was, you know what, Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, you guys figured it out. But let's get focused on Donald Trump again.
Yeah, yeah. Vice President, we haven't talked this hour at all about the potential nominees for that. If Kamala Harris is the pick, Jamal, what would you think is the right strategy there? I keep hearing about Andy Beshear, who is the governor of Kentucky, a state where I lived for a time and a state that I know pretty well. It's an interesting idea. Of course, Gretchen Whitmer is the name that comes up every once in a while, too.
Yeah, you know, the big swing would be Gretchen Whitmer. I mean, she's absolutely my favorite governor in the country, not just because she's my home state governor, but also I just think she has political chops that are unrivaled by her peers. So when you see her up close and you watch her on the stump, like I did when we were around in 2022, I just was incredibly blown away by her abilities. And obviously the work of getting the entire state legislature and the state government controlled by Democrats for the first time in my life, at least my adult life, conscious life, was just an amazing feat. But in addition, right, there's somebody like Andy Beshear, who's somebody people like a lot from Kentucky, also a great political talent.
Mm-hmm.
And really strong, not from a swing state. Now, you know, Whitmer is from a swing state, but then you have the challenge of whether or not you want two women on the same ballot. For me, I think the candidate who appeals to me the most is Senator Mark Kelly, who's from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say two things about Mark Kelly. He's a former Navy fighter pilot and an astronaut.
right. So, end of story, right?
So we can kind of stop talking about him right there. But also, Arizona is one of those states that you think you want to win, especially if something happens in another state where it gets tough. Biden won Arizona last time, so if you can win that, that's great. And then lastly, he's married to a woman people may remember who's listening, former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was tragically shot. Yeah, tragically shot in an act of political violence in Arizona. And so she has been one of the big gun safety, gun control advocates in the country and trying to prevent this kind of violence going forward. And I just think, particularly in this environment, having former Congresswoman Giffords as part of the campaigning coalition would just be an incredibly powerful ad along with Senator Kelly. So I think they make a great team.
Yeah. Okay, Jamal Simmons, political strategist, native Detroiter, and former communications director for Kamala Harris. Always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for being with us on Created Equal.
Thanks for having me, Stephen. You guys take care.
Yeah. And Professor Matt Dalek, it's always great to have you here. I'm going to give you the last word. What happens in the next 3 weeks? What's the next surprise we're all waiting for? I've only got about 30 seconds, but I'm curious about your thoughts.
I'm looking at my crystal ball, and it's impossible to say. I have enough trouble with the past, let alone the future. But briefly, look, it looks like Vice President Harris, she's going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
She's going to probably pick one of the people that Jamal Simmons just mentioned. And she's going to be tested, and it's going to be exciting. And she's going to be new. Even though she's vice president, she'll be new, and she'll be running against kind of the old, right, Donald Trump. And that will be, I think, exciting for a lot of voters.
It really changes the dynamic in the race.
Totally.
Just instantly.
Totally.
Okay, Professor Dalek, always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really great to be with you.
Okay, that is going to do it for us here on Created Equal. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.